Could you give me your name, date and place of birth?
Right, so my name is John Graham, and I live at Shap. I was actually born at Armathwaite, the side of Penrith, and moved to Rosgill in 1935. The reason, I suppose, was my father's employment. And went to school at Rosgill, and eventually left and started work with a private firm in Shap here, T. South & Sons, who were general merchandisers, supplied cattle foods, and you name it, we had it. If we hadn't it, we'd get it for you. This was the boss was like that. And in those days we had a big travelling van, which I was with, not as a driver, but as a boy. And we went to Burnbanks at that particular time every Saturday morning. And when I first started going there, of course, the place was in its heyday, if that's what you might have put it, and quite a very happy and thriving congregation lived there. And congregation is hardly the right word, but never mind. There would be a congregation because there was a mission hall there as well, and a village hall, and what they termed as the canteen, which was a club, a licensed club, and there was a general store, newsagents, and also a surgery, which was attended, I think, about twice a week. And it was quite a cosmopolitan population there because of the nature of its work. A lot of Irish people came there, and a fairly quick turnover of population, you know, by the very nature of the job.
Do you think it was a good place to live? Did the people seem happy?
Oh yes, they definitely were, because at that particular time a lot of unemployment all over the country, and people came to live there probably out of deprived areas, and they came there with a modern bungalow and a job and fresh air and wide open spaces. I mean, they couldn't help but be happy there, and they were. This is everything. People I knew was quite happy there.
The environment round about Burnbanks, could you describe it? The fields or the woodlands?
Well, as it was before, yeah, it was just wide open spaces and open moorland, which was, you know, for sheep farming, sheep being the main industry right there. And, you know, valley. Everybody said it was before it was flooded, you know, peace and tranquility, till the moguls of Manchester got their hands on it and changed all that.
When Burnbanks was first built, then you must have still had some sort of idea of the open space and the valley would be there.
Yeah, when the village was first built, of course, obviously the dam wasn't there. It's just that they built the village first before the dam, you see. And then obviously as the dam grew, obviously the view of the valley was being obscured. And when the village was first built, it was wide open moorland. There wasn't, in recent years, a lot of trees grew up all around it, but that wasn't there. If you get pictures of the site before it was anything done to it, it was just an open fell land.
So, who planted the trees? Well, more recent.
I think there would be one or two planted, you know, but I think over the years, you know, a lot have been self-planted, haven't they? I mean, they've just been and nobody sort of knocked them down, they just let them grow, you know. They got a bit of a wilderness at the end, but I think they've knocked a lot down now, haven't they, while they demolished all these.
I believe so.
Yes, they're going to rebuild.
And the roads at that time, were they quite well maintained?
Well,
were they tarred?
Not. I don't think the road up Bardale was tarred. It was a paved, you know, not a tarmac road, as we know it.
A gravel road.
More or less a gravel road, yes, which we get back down in town. Because, well, A, there wasn't the amount of traffic on there. I mean, for example, in Mardale, as far as I can recall, there would only be the Dunbull with a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
The rest was, you know, horse and traps and things.
So Burnbanks would be similar then, when you went there at first?
Yeah.
There would be no tarred roads, presumably?
Yeah, I think the tarred road, as we would know it, would finish at Burnbanks,
right,
originally.
Okay.
And of course it was extended after that, and then when they built a new road.
Did the road that go into Burnbanks, did it go further, or did it stop?
Yeah. The road that goes into Burnbanks now,
mm-hmm,
that was the original road, and just carried straight on down the opposite side of the valley, of course, so what the new one is now, you see.
Were there any streetlights? Or
No.
There's not that many around today.
No, there's nothing in that nature, no. The church had two oil lamps outside in winter, but that's about the extent of public lighting, yeah.
And then Burnbanks itself, did people own cars?
I don't think they would do. There would be the odd one, probably, I wouldn't like to say, but if the same situation was done again today, well, every house would have a car, wouldn't it, at least? Whereas those days, there would be the odd motorbike, as we've seen this lady on the one here. The motorbike, there would possibly be... There might have been the odd household with a car, but I can't bring one to mind. I can't remember seeing cars parked outside anybody's house, you know.
So, yeah, I guess people would walk.
Oh, well, there was a bus service. There was quite a good bus service run by a local firm, Colson's of Penrith. I don't know how frequently it ran, but it would suffice, I suppose.
It'd be more frequent than today's one, you originally went there with your shop, but in terms of houses, can you give me an idea of the number of houses?
Well, yes. I think there'd be somewhere in the region of 66, the original police station in Burnbanks Village. That was number 66. That was the original police station, number 66. Now then, there were, in addition, I don't know whether in addition or part of them, but there was, I think there were 8 bigger lodging houses, and each of those had 13 small bedrooms, 13 small cubicles for single men.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who looked after me, see, they had a house attached to the end. It was all one building. I've got pictures of them, interior shots as well. So... What one about?
How many houses?
Oh, how many?
And descriptions of the houses as well.
Well, as I say, there was 8 of those. Now, whether that 66 included them, which I think it would do, and the style of houses, well, they were, prefabs, weren't they? The forerunners of what we knew as prefabs, and. I think there's 3 different sizes, 3, 2 and 1 bedroom ones, depending, if you just had a married couple with no family, well, they'd just get a single one. But some of them had families, of course, some of them with quite a few, with big families, 8 and 9 in the families. And, of course, they've all spread and gone to all parts of the globe by now, but... And they're all single story, and the heating was all by stoves. They didn't have an open fireplace as you see them now. They're all stoves.
Was it wood burning or coal?
I would think it'd be coal burning. Yes, I couldn't just remember that part. But
did the houses have electrical light?
Yeah. Now there's the thing. At that particular time, there wasn't electricity up there. Obviously not. But they did have they built their own power station up at Burnbanks, obviously in connection with the works as well, and the houses at the houses as well. And also, it supplies the, it's still there, that power station, and it supplies also the hotel up there, is still on that scheme. Because a few weeks ago it changed hands and we were up there, and they were cutting electricity off 3 days in the week while they're doing maintenance work on the thing, you see.
Mm.
So if they'd been on the main grid, of course, that wouldn't have applied. But it's because there's a big pumping station there, you see, and that's all done by electric pumps. And they've got their own power supply. I don't think there'll be any grid up there yet. I'm not quite sure on that point, but originally, that's how it was all done.
Did the houses have indoor bathrooms?
Yes, they were quite modern. I mean, lots of people moving there don't know what the hell had hit them, you know.
And the same with clothes washing, did they have facilities in each of the house for laundry?
Oh yes, so they were very modern by the standard in those days, decidedly. As a matter of fact, some were demolished and re-erected around. There's two lots in Shapa here, still going strong.
Really?
Mm. They were semi-detached, you see. There was no individual ones, they were all semi-detached.
Yeah.
Apart from the big ones I told you, which housed the single men, they were individual. Massive great things.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think we've covered pretty much all the description of the house. Was it during your time there, going there, obviously, it was over quite an extended period that you knew Burnbanks. Did you see any improvements to the houses over time?
No, I can't say that there was, actually, because, as I've just said, they were ahead of the time, actually, to start with. Hot and cold water, flush toilets, bathrooms,
That's it. Carry on.
Is it working again?
Yeah, it's working again.
Yeah, well, as I said, the interiors, as I've just said, were well ahead of the time. Exterior-wise, a number of them had nice gardens, but quite a few, didn't really bother about, because the simple reason that, you had a constant turnover of population. I mean, you get somebody that might just be there less than a year, so they're not going to really bother themselves about the exterior.
Did a lot of the people that stayed there, if they had gardens, did they grow vegetables and things in the garden?
There might have been the odd one, but, it certainly wasn't an ongoing thing that, no. Yeah, they might have just put a few flowers around the door, but...
But not too much.
But didn't, it's as far as we're going. So as I say, because, people, you're going to have a nice garden and next thing you know, you're on your way. So.
The work done by the people that lived in Burnbanks, can you describe anything about the jobs that they did? Their hours or pay and conditions, that kind of thing. And did they ever go on strike?
Well, working conditions in those days are vastly different to what we have now. I mean, pictures of the workmen working there, I mean, there's hardly any protective clothing for the start of, no hard hats and all that kind of thing, which goes hand in glove nowadays. And as far as strikes, I don't think there was actually a strike as such, threatened, because the rate of pay was just 11.5 an hour. And working knee deep in concrete was a very arduous job, and threatened a strike to get better working conditions, and they were eventually awarded threepence an hour, which brought the pay up to something in the region of 1.25 an hour, or to bring it back in today's terms, around about £2.15 for a 45-hour week, which, by today's, I mean, £2.15, I can't even get a pint of Guinness for that now. Never mind a week, works week, and therefore, at one period of time as well, I understand at the start of the project that workmen didn't get what they called wet pay. If they were rained off, that was it. They just had lost the pay. But I think that was righted eventually, as far as you understand.
Do you have an idea how many hours they would work in a week?
Well, as far as I know, For example, we used to go up there on a Saturday morning, and I think they had Saturday half day. I think they just worked a normal type of week, you know. There would be overtime done at some time if it was necessary, but I think on the whole they would just work a standard week.
You mentioned that they threatened to go on strike. Were there trade unions there?
That's a good question indeed. Well, if there were trade unions, obviously weren't very strong, were they? I mean, not like we know today, of course. I never heard unions mentioned, but you see, I was just a young lad when I was going up there. I wasn't involved in that kind of thing.
Obviously, there are a lot of children lived at Burnbanks. Do you know which schools they went to?
Well, that's a question I've been asked over the years a number of times. They built a village hall, I've just stated, complete with billiard tables and everything in it, a club, shops, surgery, newsagent, a mission hall, but not a school. And you would have seen, well, there were quite a number of children there, obviously, but they built an addition onto Bampton School, the wooden, if you've seen the wooden structure, that was built to cope with the extra scholars who, I'm not quite sure how they got down to Bampton School. I've heard and I've seen somewhere about they used an old ambulance for one thing, but possibly a lot of the kids would walk. Yeah. I mean, I walked a mile after school when I started at 5-year-old. I mean, it was quite commonplace in them days. I mean, but that's how. That was the education part of it, and people have said, well, right, possibly these particularly correct people nowadays say, well, all right, they build a pub for the workmen, but nothing for the kids, which just seem, you know, I mean, they went to all the and there was plenty of space, and the type of buildings they were erecting, I mean, those big houses with the 13 cubicles in were quite extensive. I'm sure one that size would have done for a school. But no, that's how there it is.
Did any of the older children go on to secondary school?
Well, in those days, you see, there wasn't a secondary school, was there, before the war type of thing? I mean, at your ordinary school, you set an exam when you're about 10, which if you passed, you went to the grammar school, local grammar school. And they would have the same opportunities. I mean, the ones who went to Bampton School, they would get the same opportunities as anyone else.
Moving on to local services, which I think might be your forte. What was in Burnbanks? Could you tell me a bit about the shop that was there, and obviously your own mobile shops, and the other things like the post office, the surgery?
Aye, well, there was a general store, and also I think there was a small drapery store as well. I can't say that I was ever in them, but as far as I'm concerned, I mean, we had what you might call a mobile grocery shop. There was also butchers, bakers, fishmen. There was all kinds of vans on the road in those days, bakeries, and nothing fresh to be up there on a Saturday morning, and probably another four or five vans at the same time.
Did they all come from Shap or from all
over? Well, we were from Shap, obviously, and there was a butcher from Shap in those days, Wrights. Possibly the rest would come from Penrith.
So your own mobile shop, what kind of goods did it sell? What kind of things did it sell?
Latterly, when we got the big ones, I mean, virtually a bit of everything you try to cope, you know, and you think you've got everything on, but, you know, somebody always asked for something you hadn't got, but... It was appreciated, that kind of service, and myself personally, you know, when you go week in, week out, year in, year out, I mean, and you know these people, and you know, you're accepted as part of their family, they confide in you with the problems and all this kind of thing, and it's you know, it's a nice environment to be working in, that type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
There's always the odd one, of course, but
as well as obviously the mobile shops that went there and the other shop that was in the village, did the people that lived at Burnbanks often come up to shop?
Well, no. They see, as we've just mentioned, I don't think we'd have many cars about. Mm. And this local firm from Penrith, Colson's, ran, I think, a fairly adequate service into Penrith daily. And I think Saturday afternoons, especially, I've been on the coaches myself, have been pretty well packed with Burnbanks people. So I think, you know, anything they wanted, which they couldn't get at the door, so to speak, would be done in Penrith.
Penrith.
Yes. Mm.
So presumably that would be on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, Saturday would be the main, yeah. The main thing. Yeah. The housewife, of course, could tootle off through the week if she wanted. There would be families up there. There was families up there, of course, with no, or I should say, couples with no families, so they weren't tied. You know, could go off midweek.
Can you tell me anything about the people that actually lived there and where they come from originally?
Well, the ones I got to know quite well came from, as I say, back in the late 1920s, when they were gathering the workforce together. A lot of men were on the dole at the time because of depression, and work was very scarce. And I think there was a system at that time, they were more or less hijacked into it. You know, they were given the opportunity of a job, and I think if they refused it, you know, they could be struck off the dole list. I mean, being hijacked, more or less. So, which, that of course, brought people in from all over, Ireland, Scotland, okay. All over the place, yeah.
And from other parts of Cumbria as well?
Yes, there would be, yeah.
What kind of jobs did they do? Was it mostly the manual labour?
Yeah, I mean, it was manual labour, you know, but they didn't have the machinery. When you see photos of the dam being built, I mean, by today's standards, it's very archaic indeed. I mean, as I've just mentioned, men working knee-deep in concrete with no protective clothing. You know, and so I would think, well, I think 75% of the work would be all manual labour. Very state of the thing.
If people were coming from all over, was there much of a sort of community spirit?
There was a community spirit, yes. As I say, they built all these amenities for them, which helped to get a community, because in the whole, you know, dances and concerts and all this kind of thing, and the mission hall, because of such a cosmopolitan population, you had all kinds of faiths there, you know, Methodist Church, Catholics, whatever, and the mission hall was used, you know, for them all.
Okay,
so multi-faith. Yes, exactly. Yeah, interdenominational, I think, is the word used.
Yes. Got on okay. There was no
oh yes, I can't recall. I mean, as I said, I didn't actually live in the place,
no.
But I can never remember anybody, you know, me going up there one Saturday morning and say, "Oh, there was a terrible fight last night between Matey and, you know, this guy." I don't think that there would be the old. If you get a lot of rough chaps working doing manual work, I mean, and they get a pint or two of beer, well, you know, the odd argument. Not about that, but I don't think there was any racial or religious disputes, you know. The village wasn't sort of half between this, that and the other, you know.
I mean, with all this movement around, was there any evidence that there was a bit of culture shock if people were moving to a rural area from a town? Was there any evidence that you saw of people being unhappy or not knowing what to
well,
do?
Well, not I can't recall any instance, but you see, as I said before, the people there was chappies coming there for a job who probably hadn't had a job for 4 or 5 years and probably lived in poor conditions, and then suddenly transplanted into this environment there where everybody's working, everybody's happy, and they've got a modern house. So all that helped to make it a happy village.
That's good.
As I just said, there wouldn't be any dispute, yeah, would not.
I think there always is.
Yes.
And the Bunbanks people, did they get on okay with the people that lived in Bampton and
with the locals? I would think so, as far as I know. I mean, I can't recall. I mean, any problems at all?
Moving on to social activities, which ties in with the people that lived there, obviously. You've mentioned that there was the mission hall. Did they have dances or sports clubs and that?
Yeah, they had this village hall, mm-hmm. which is quite a substantial one by day standards, and in there they had dances practically every weekend, concerts and all this kind of thing, and there was 2 full-sized snooker tables at one end of it. So the population mixed in, and that helped a lot. I mean, there wasn't it wasn't a case of them and us, you know. I mean, they were a happy community.
And the people from Bampton, or like the local people, did they go to these dances?
Oh yes. I've been myself to a dance. I was only a teenager probably, but I can remember going there. I think it was 6 months to get in.
Did you enjoy it?
That's right. I think we were about 16 or something, and because drinking and things didn't come into it in those days, you know. And oh yes, we thoroughly enjoyed it, yeah.
Good. Do you remember any of the Bunbanks residents taking part in hunting or walking, fishing, outdoor pursuits?
Now then, that's a good question. I couldn't really say on that thing, but as I say, I don't think there's any animosity between locals and the Bunbanks people. So I mean, if they wanted to go and join in the hunt, I'm sure they'd have been quite welcome, because of the jollifications at Mardle Hunt. I'm sure they'd be quite welcome. So I've never known anybody say otherwise.
So they're fairly integrated into the local community then,
aren't they? Oh yes, I mean, they had their own football team, for example, you see, so therefore they were playing with the villages in the locality, and they were coming to Bunbanks to play matches up there, and the Horsewater United, as it was called, was quite a useful team. I mean, I think they beat Shap in a cup final in a replay.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, nasty things, weren't they?
Okay, we've covered a bit about religion. You said that the mission hall sort of catered for everyone that was there.
Oh yes, it did. Yes, I mean, the mission hall, as far as I understand, wasn't built specifically for any one religion. I mean, they all used it.
Or did some of the locals, some of the Bunbanks residents, go to Bampton to go to church there? Or?
Now there's a question. I have records of some Bunbanks people being christened in Mardale Church. The Mardale Church was still open until August 1935. And even though Bunbanks village, as you will well know, was in Bampton Parish, the church was actually in Shap Parish. So, you know, the division, because Bunbanks village itself, there's a river runs up, and on one side is Bampton Parish and Shap's on the other. And the dividing line, if you draw it, well, I've seen an imaginary line, it was drawn so far down the lake centre, then turns off just past the vicarage, where the vicarage used to be. So therefore, even though Bunbanks village itself would be in Bampton Parish, Mardle Church was in Shap Parish. But I have records showing Bunbanks kids being christened in Mardale Church. As a matter of fact, I think the, one of the last ones, if not the last one, was Ernest Crabtree. It was a well-known Burnbanks family. And Raymond Holliday, who I've mentioned, he was christened. I think there would be about the last two to be christened at Mardle Church.
World War II, I realised that you were away for a bit of it. before you joined the NAF. When the war started, did life change in Burnbanks?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, the subject of blackout and the usual things and rationing whatever, but I don't think that Burnbank specifically was anything different to anywhere else at the time.
Did people move away?
Oh, I don't think so. I think people just carried on, you see, because the dam itself wasn't completed till 1941, was when the water was turned on for the first time. But then there was still a lot of renovation work to be done, and a lot of workmen still stayed on and did that for a number of years.
So in the early part of the war, before the dam was finished, did work in the dam slow down, or did it just carry on?
Well, when the actual construction was finished, I mean, as I say, there was still a lot of tidying up to do and restoration work, walls to be built and all kinds of things to be done, so it kept a fair workforce going for a while. Because the Manchester Corporation Waterworks, as it was all known as then, you see, owned quite a bit of property as well in the area, so there's a workforce doing maintenance, you know, general maintenance work for a long time.
So when did you finish visiting Burnbanks?
Did I finish?
Yes.
Well, I continued going up there till 1963, and by then I think we were down to about 63. I think there was only about 8 or 9 families left then, and they wouldn't all be employed by Manchester Corporation. I think some have been sold off privately and such things as that. So by 1963, I mean, it was only a shadow. It would be difficult. If you'd taken somebody up there in 1960, or even now, it's going to be difficult to get them to realise what a humming carry-on it was. You know, I mean, you... the estimate, I've seen somewhere an estimation at one time, I think the workforce was about 350. They wouldn't all be married, of course, but I mean... if you have 66 houses... I mean, that generates quite a bit of activity in its own, doesn't it? There are a lot of kids running around and all that kind of thing.
I mean, did any of the single men that worked there meet local girls and marry and stay in the area?
Yes. Yes, there would be. Off the top of my head, I can't just think of any, but I'm sure. They would do, yeah. For example, the... Sylvia,
yes.
Right, she married a chap who Burnbanks.
Okay.
And I mentioned Ray Holliday from Penruddock. He married a girl I wouldn't know where from, to be sad, but the other chap, his brother June Holliday, she married a chap, Fred Nansen, who lived at Motherby.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, there were.
Romantic interest.
Yeah.
So after the dam was complete, you mentioned that some people were employed to stay on and finish off work, but did the majority leave?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, when the dam was completed, I mean, I would imagine a good 90% of the workforce at that time would be finished with, you see.
Mm.
And they'd all just leave and go their own way.
Yeah, it must have had a very large impact in the village,
really. Yeah.
And the local area, I would think.
Oh, yeah, I mean, tradespeople, for example, I mean, you get a village of that size, 66 houses. I mean, you know, it's quite the size of, if you compare how many houses you've got in Bampton Grange, but probably won't even be that
many,
number.
I don't think.
No, well, so if you put Grange and Bampton together and sort of make it twice as big, that's what you've suddenly got transplanted into Mardo. So it's bound to...
Noticeably quieter.
Well, they even had their own policeman there, haven't they? So, you know, big enough to run a police station and all these other amenities I mentioned, so...
I mean, going back to services like the police, the fire service and things, was the one at Sharp the closest?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have their own. So, I mean, as far as things like, you know, police... well, they had their own police, I've mentioned that, about the fire service. Fire service and ambulance and doctors and that thing. They would just be part of the community, you know, part of the area that was covered by this. There was no special provision made by the fire service to cover burn banks. Not specifically, they would just have to take the look with the rest of us, you know.
Yeah, they were just treated like, part of the wider area. Well, I think that's just covered all the topics. And I think... Yeah, that's about it, really, unless there's anything else you can think of that you want to add.
I don't know. I think we've been more or less... I think we've discussed mostly what I know of it, anyways.
Yeah. Well, we'll stop it there just now, but we can have a look at the transcription and add...
Well, yes, any time. I mean... I've just got the copy back of the video we've had done, you see.
Oh, all right, yeah.
And the chap who's done it, the chap you probably want. I was still switched on, isn't I?
I'll switch it off, actually. I can figure it out.